Goddess Panacea, gentle healer, daughter of sacred remedy, she whose touch restores what has been fractured, I call to you. You who move through the hidden places, through the quiet wounds that go unnamed, through the body, the mind, and the unseen layers between, be present here, not as distant myth, but as living medicine. Reveal where healing is ready, soften where it has been hardened. Bring coherence where there has been fragmentation, and teach me to recognize that restoration is not something I chase, but something I allow. Across thousands of years, people have spoken words to the divine, but not all of the words were the same. Some of them were prayers shaped by distance. Some of them were offerings that were shaped by devotion. But invocation was different. Invocation wasn't about reaching upwards. It was about opening a space where the divine could meet you directly. In temples, yes, but also in the body, in your breath, and in your awareness. And this matters because when we talk about connecting to a goddess today, it often stays quite abstract or symbolic, even at times quite conceptual. But historically, that's not how this worked. People expected something to happen, maybe a shift in perception, a change in state, a sense of presence that you could feel, not something that was just imagined. So today's episode is not just about what invocation is, it's about what it does, and more importantly, what becomes possible when you stop relating to the goddess as an idea and start relating to her as an experience and connection. So let's start simple here. The word invoke comes from the Latin word invocare, which means to call upon or to summon, but historically, invocation wasn't casual. It wasn't symbolic, and it wasn't just this poetic language. It was understood as a real act of connection. And here's where we need to make an important distinction. Invocation is not the same as prayer. Prayer, in many traditions, is about asking. It often comes from this place of distance, right, from human to divine. Invocation is different. It's about calling presence in. Sometimes into a space, sometimes into your awareness, and sometimes even into the body itself. In ancient Greece, many hymns began with an invocation. So if we look at the Homeric hymns, you'll hear the phrases like this, I begin to sing of. But this wasn't just storytelling. It was a way of opening a channel, of inviting the deity into the act of speech. The Orphic hymns go even further. They call upon specific aspects of the gods using this rich, layered language. So for example, in the Orphic hymn to Hecate, we have the following. I call upon Hecate, torch-bearing mistress of night, keeper of the keys, wandering through the darkness. So this isn't a vague invocation. It's quite precise, it's intentional, it's even relational. If we were to take a look at ancient Egypt in Egyptian temple traditions, priests performed daily rituals to awaken the god within the statue. They would speak, they would anoint, and then tend to the image. Not because they believed that the statue was the god, but because it became this point of presence through ritual and even through invocation. And even in the Vedic traditions, mantras function as invocations through sound. The vibration itself was considered a vehicle for divine connection. So across cultures, we kind of see the same core idea here. Words, when it's spoken with intention, rhythm, and attention, becomes a bridge. So how was invocation used? So invocation, again, it wasn't casual and it actually wasn't interchangeable. It was used with very clear intention depending on what the practitioner was seeking. So let's talk about inviting the presence in. So when ancient practitioners invoked a deity, they weren't just thinking about that deity, they were creating the conditions for that encounter. So this might have looked like maybe a shift in atmosphere, a change in the emotional tone, a heightened sense of awareness, or even in more advanced settings, you'll have trance or even altered states. But here's the important part. Presence didn't always arrive dramatically. Often it arrived quite subtly through attention sharpening or a feeling of being accompanied rather than being alone. And that's something that I hope you can relate to hope that you can understand, because there's this misconception that through this goddess experience or through invoking a deity, it has to come with lightning. But often it can be this subtle experience. All right, so let's move on to embodying qualities. So I think this is where invocation becomes spiritually and maybe even psychologically powerful. Each goddess represents a pattern of intelligence, not just a personality, but a way of perceiving and responding to reality that is so, so important when you are communing with any spirit. So when you choose to invoke a goddess, we're going to take Athena here as an experience, your thinking will become more strategic and less reactive. Let's say that we invoke Inanna. You might feel a stronger tolerance for dissent or intensity or even the experience of transformation. And Panacea, who we tackled in the previous episode, perhaps when you invoke her, your awareness may move toward integration, toward repair, and hopefully towards wholeness. And you're not pretending to be these things, so I don't want that to be in your mind. You're activating these latent capacities that already exist within you, but they're often dormant or even fragmented. And that's why invocation can feel like becoming more yourself, not necessarily less. All right, let's move on to building relationships here, because I think it makes this more real. So when we think about relationships, this implies recognition over time, familiarity, or even some sort of subtle responsiveness. And the ancients repeated invocations because repetition creates these neural and these symbolic pathways. So over time, the words become charged, the response becomes quicker, and the connection becomes more stable. I would also say the connection here would become more consistent. So this is no different structurally than building trust with a person, except that the medium is internal, it's symbolic and energetic. And this is where most modern, I think, practice kind of falls short. People might try it once and then they don't feel anything overly dramatic, and so they assume it doesn't work. But if we look at this from more of a historical lens, this was disciplined practice. It wasn't an instant experience here. So discipline matters in any type of devotional practice, such as this one. So why does invocation work? So let's try to get to this deeper question. Why does it work? Not just spiritually, but maybe psychologically or energetically and even experientially. Number one, I'm going to say language shapes consciousness. So words are never neutral. When you speak with intention, especially repeated rhythmic language, you begin to shift your internal state. Perhaps your attention begins to narrow in the process, and then your awareness also starts to deepen. I think through the practice of invocation, consistent invocation, especially when you're invoking any goddess, I'm just saying Panacea here, through the invocation process repeatedly, like saying the invocation over and over and over, you begin to move out of distraction and then into presence, which is important. And I think that that alone changes what you're able to perceive. It also strengthens your connection to that goddess. And it's a very experiential process. Okay, number two, it engages the body. So invocation, it's not just mental. It might on the surface seem that way, but it is a physical experience. When you speak aloud, your breath starts to change, your nervous system begins to respond, and your voice carries this tone, the emotion, and even the rhythm. And this does create a felt experience. And that matters because connection to the sacred isn't just something that you think. It's something that you feel. And I would say, just from a personal experience here when I'm doing my invocations to said goddess, whom that might be for me, the longer I do it, the stronger the connection is. It can also be very, depending on the nature of that goddess's energy, you'll experience it that way. Also dependent upon the words that you are using and the intention behind and the meaning behind that invocation, that will also create the experience and how you feel in the body. All right, so I also want to talk here about kind of bridging the inner and even the archetypal reality, because I think this is important. So I want to kind of strip this down to something, hopefully, that's honest and usable. You don't need to force yourself into a belief that you don't fully hold, because invocation, it operates across these multiple frameworks all at once. If you experience the goddess as a literal being, invocation becomes this form of communication and an invitation. If you experience her as an archetype, invocation becomes this way of activating a deep psychological pattern, something that Jung might describe as a structuring force within your psyche. If you experience her as a dimension of consciousness, invocation becomes a shift in awareness. It's kind of like tuning into a different frequency of perception, right? So we have really these different explanations here, but kind of the same mechanism. You're focusing on a coherent pattern of meaning using name, symbol, story, and sensation. And when attention stabilizes around that particular pattern, your mind and your body begin to organize around it. That's the activation. And this is not because something external is being forced, but because something internal is being brought into alignment with it. All right, so let's talk a little bit about alignment creating access. I think this is where a lot of spiritual language can become fuzzy, so my goal here is to try to make this pretty concrete. Invocation is not persuasion. You're not convincing, you're not begging, or you're not even performing for a response. You're adjusting your own internal state. So kind of think of it like this. So right now, your attention is scattered. It's being pulled in multiple directions. When you invoke, number one, again, you narrow your attention through your words. You stabilize it through repetition, and you give it direction through your intention. This in itself creates coherence, and coherence is what changes your perception. So when your perception changes, two things happen. Number one, you begin to notice what was already present, but overlooked. And number two, you experience these internal shifts that feel like contact or even feel like guidance. That's the access. So when I say you're not forcing anything, you know, you're kind of like tuning yourself, what I mean is that you're moving from distraction into focus. You're moving from this sense of fragmentation into coherence, and even from what could seem like this distant concept into this direct experience. And in that shift, the goddess becomes more available to you. So the question isn't necessarily whether or not the goddess is present. The goddess is present. The question is whether your attention is refined enough to perceive her. Okay, so how do we practice invocation? I want to try to make this as practical as possible. If you've never worked with invocation before, it doesn't have to be complicated. Maybe you have worked with invocation with other spirits. It's the same thing with the goddesses, right? There might be some differences, but overall, the nature is the same, right? The invocation, the practice, it needs to be intentional. So I'm going to try to give you a simple structure that you can use personally. So number one, call the goddess by name, of course, and if possible, include an epithet. I would highly recommend you utilize an epithet. So for example, not just Hecate, but Hecate, Keeper of the Threshold. That creates the specificity. So learn the epithets. I think I've talked about this in a previous episode before, but it is super helpful. And just as a quick side note here, I've probably told this before, so I'm sorry. But there are times where I'm invoking a certain goddess that I connect with, and I've heard when I'm discussing something with them, I will hear them say the aspect of themselves, which is the epithet that I should connect deeper with. or more clarity on whatever topic we're discussing, which is a very interesting experience. So the epithets do matter. Become familiar with them. Okay. So number two, you need to acknowledge or name her qualities. You know, for example, you who walk between the worlds. We're still sticking with Hecate here. You who hold the keys to what is hidden. That's where the connection begins to deepen. Number three, this invitation, right? This is kind of the core here. I call you into this space, into my awareness, into this moment. Be clear. Number four, like the intention. Why are you calling her? Here's a good example. Like, guide me in seeing what I've avoided. Illuminate what I cannot yet understand. Keep it honest. Keep it clear. You don't have to use language that you think is overly impressive. Just be honest and direct. Next, what's important is to pause. This is where most people rush. After you speak, be quiet. Let it land. Even if nothing happens that's overly dramatic, something is shifting, okay? And this is important. This is the practice. It's not a performance. And it deepens over time. And the more you do it, the more sensitive you become to subtle shifts, whether these are internal or whether they are these external shifts. The only thing I could add to this is that when you are building that relationship, building that connection with whatever goddess that you want to connect with, the invocation practice, this is something I always do every day. This is very personal for me, but also is highly effective because I find the power and the energy of the words builds over time and strengthens that bond. The piece of advice I would give you if you feel like, oh, nothing's happening, or I want to build a stronger connection and I don't know how to do this, repetition matters. Yes, of course, the devotion and a commitment, 100%, but while you're doing the invocation, if this is the route that you want to take, the repetition matters. And it can be, I'm just trying to think here for a second to give you an example. Let's say that I am invoking the goddess Athena in relation to something specific. I might use the epithet Ergani, like Athena Ergani, you know, the guide of skillful hands and disciplined mind. Maybe with a couple of other details to that invocation. I will sit at the altar. I will light the candles. I will offer an offering. I will light the incense. And I will, for me personally, turn on music that I've aligned with her energy and for that experience, to be honest. And then I will invoke with what I just told you, like Athena Ergani, et cetera, et cetera. I will repeat over and over and over and over. And what I have personally noticed is that the more I repeat it, the more I am calling that in towards me, the stronger the energy gets. Now, what does that actually look like? Again, this is specific to you. Your experience is probably going to be different than mine. To me, it is a stronger energy around my body, in my head, and I start to feel a little bit dizzy. For you, you might feel a warm sensation, a cold sensation, a breeze. You also might feel a little bit disoriented. It doesn't have to be some earth-shattering experience, right? You're building that connection just through invocation. People can utilize a variety of ways to connect to the goddess. I'm just focusing on invocation today, but there's also through dance. I think that's a powerful way as well to connect to a goddess. Okay, so I think there's something else I wanted to add here, and I think it's important to this conversation. Not everything that's labeled invocation or even the divine feminine or divine feminine work, I'll put it that way, is actually quite deep. Some of it's aesthetic, right? Some of it's disconnected from history, and some of it kind of stays pretty much at the surface. I think that real invocation, it requires attention. Consistency is so key. And of course, your willingness to be changed by what you're calling in, because if you are truly invoking a goddess, you really are inviting in transformation, right? That's the nature of that relationship. So the power of invocation is not in like harnessing the perfect words. It's in the willingness to really mean them, to believe them, and then to listen for what answers. So if you sit with this practice, even briefly, again, you might begin to notice that the goddess that you are connected with is not as far away as you may have initially thought. I really hope that this has been helpful for you to some degree. Again, I think sometimes it can be confusing to know where to begin. There are multiple ways. Again, I want to reiterate, this is not the only way, and also my way may not be in alignment with your way, and that's completely fine as well. My job is not to sit here and dictate how you do things, but I'm just showing you one path. So if this episode resonated with you, I would recommend to, research a goddess or two or three or four or five. Take your time. There's no need to rush here. But after all your researching, just pick one and then begin there. All right. Speak her name. Of course, learn her stories, her qualities, offerings, etc. But return to her consistently. That's how the connection is built. I will say, as a short aside here, there's one goddess that I've been connecting with for a little while, and I know she wanted me to, and I personally thought, why me? We're so different. I know that's so stupid and naive, but I'm just going to say it out loud. Like, oh, that's so strange. But I have made the commitment to meet with her every week, and she's entirely not what I thought, but also, she reminds me, she always says, return to me, meet with me. So the commitment is the moral of the story, and the consistency, it really does matter. So if you take this seriously, you'll find a way to make the time. I know we're all very short on time, but even a few minutes at the altar, I think is, it's super helpful to your practice and to strengthen your connection. And also lastly, I'm going off on a detour here since I have you. And you're probably still listening, I hope. Don't be afraid to speak to the goddess even while you're driving to work. I know, again, time is so short for a lot of us, depending on your life. Even in the shower, I know that sounds ridiculous. I'm not trying to imply removing the sacredness of that connection, but I'm also mindful that we are humans, having a human experience, meaning we work, jobs all day. And you might have children to take care of, parents to take care of, so on and so forth. The point is to make the effort here. That's what matters. So everybody, I hope that this was helpful in some way for you, some way, shape, or form. And as always, I just want to thank you so much for listening to the episode, and I look forward to connecting with you all very soon. All right, take care. Bye-bye.